the Cold Omaha Podcast Network.
You can put it on the board.
Woo!
Here for another episode of Midwest Swing. You can find us on Twitter at Midwest Swing Pod. We are part of the Cold Omaha / Zone Coverage Podcast Network. You can find us on Twitter for the network at Zone Coverage MN. I am your host, Brandon Warren. You can find me on Twitter at Brandon _ Warren. I am joined, as always, across the board here by Tom Schreier at TSchreier3. Tom, I feel dumb. It was just recently that I figured out what the three stands for on your Twitter handle.
Yeah. How did you find that out?
You told me here at the meeting last week.
Oh, really? I don't remember what I tell people.
So he is the third iteration of Tom Schreier, if you can believe there's two others. So maybe someday we'll get to meet them. Just came off our first meeting, hung out with the guys at the Dojo Group. Pretty cool office over in the northeast side of Minneapolis. But, we've got a lot of big things happening. Be sure to join our March Madness pool. You can find it on Facebook. Like Cold Omaha on Facebook. Check it out. I think if you scroll down a little ways, you can find that. You can compete against us, too. I understand that we are each going to do a bracket, and you can kind of see.
We can't win.
We can't win, but you can see how you do against us. And speaking of brackets, we got a guy that's covered some basketball in his lifetime waiting for us on the phone down in, I believe, sunny Fort Myers, Florida. We got Mike Berardino of the Pioneer Press on the phone. Mike, what's going on down in Fort Myers?
Well, kind of quiet today. Twins off day for them, and they only have a couple all spring, but and I'm taking a couple of days away from get attention and working ahead on some features, and it's been good. It's really been a fairly quiet camp so far.
Well, and I understand you have your son down there with you. It's pretty exciting time for him to be down there as well, so we're gonna keep it to a quick 30 for you and get you back to enjoying your time down there. Is it pretty warm and sunny right now?
Yes. But not terribly warm. I mean, it's pleasant. This is having lived in Florida for 32 of my years, not counting these last few spring trainings, last five for Minnesota Twins coverage. This is pretty good.
Well, it's 21 degrees here, driving across to get to the station here. So it's certainly much warmer where you are. But what's the temperature of this ball club right now? Obviously, I think a lot of fans are predictably down, and the 19-0 loss earlier in spring training got a lot of those fans coming to roost about how this team's done nothing to improve and they're destined to lose 100 games again. But what would be your analysis if you were to take the temperature of this team right now?
Well, good or bad, you can't read just about anything into the result of a spring training game because no one's managing them to win, and many times you're not pitching to win. You're working on something. That's a real thing. That's not just an excuse. And so you have outings where last time out, Irvin Santana facing Colombia's WBC team was purposely throwing changeups in situations he would never throw in the season. That's why it's going to be very interesting to see him next time on a mound in a WBC pressure situation, which no one was expecting that he would have to deal with. He's not ramped up toward it. You're pretty much trying to get through healthy. You're trying to get a certain number of plate appearances for people with track records who tend to like that range of plate appearances. For instance, Mulder would like to get about 60 for Sano, but Mauer's number is typically, as I wrote earlier this spring, in that 40 to 45 range at the very most, 35 to 45, and similar for Dozier probably this time. So you're just trying to get people to feel ready. But results aren't going to tell you anything, good or bad.
Now, you mentioned Irvin Santana. He's going to be starting Saturday for the Dominican team against Team USA. What what makes a World Baseball Classic spring training feel differently, or what is different about it from your standpoint as compared to an ordinary spring training?
Well, first, any front office that has people going to the WBC is fearful that there will be an incident like Drew Butera running into Sal Perez the other day. So, you know, both Royals catchers, amazing that that would happen.
It feels like a vice president line of succession kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I don't think that, you know, I don't know what the odds are that you could have created that moment, but it happened. And it's something that even the indestructible Sal Perez has to be monitored now. But if, you know, Sam Deduno 4 years ago was, you know, member of the Twins rotation and he injured his groin pitching in a championship game on a wet mound in San Francisco. And I don't think he was really right, you know, for a while there after that. So these are the kinds of things that everybody worries about. You see a Barrios going out there with full steam. Now you're going to see Irvin do something that all winter he pretty much thought he wasn't going to do. So I think it's that, you know, just the tug and the push and pull of are you ramping up? Are you not? Are you easing into your season? Are you, you know, Hector Santiago? Same sort of thing. How about Hector Santiago? You know, get lit up up the road against the Rays. That didn't really matter because he was, again, working on his screwball that day. And then next thing you know, he's pitching for Puerto Rico, which he expected, but pitching in relief behind a guy who was in AAA all last year for the Brewers. What was that?
Yeah, it's so, strange.
I you know, teams sign off on these arrangements. They're primary employers, and they sign off with an agreement, generally, of how that player will be used. It's not just pitch count. It's, you know, it's role. And that's why this whole who was going to start next for the Dominican thing was so is so fascinating. And you know, it also knocks Irvin offline, really, for now, for starting opening day. They had all that perfectly lined up. Every fifth day he would pitch, and then on April 3rd he would start the season as a Twins opening day starter. Now he'd be off a day, potentially, depending on how he comes out of that Saturday opportunity.
Do you have any insight as to why he swapped over to deciding to pitch for the Dominican team after, you know, I don't know if it'd be flatly denying, but certainly not sounding like he was really interested in the opportunity beforehand?
No, he was very interested in September when I talked to him, and I wrote about it then because he's very proud of the fact that he's climbing the lists of Dominican pitching standards.
I mean, oh yeah, that's your guy's little thing. Yeah,
that's I like to update him on that, and he you know, even hit by pitches by Dominican pitchers, he takes some. You know, he kind of jokes around about that. So his place, his legacy, the fact that he's never had an opportunity to pitch for the WBC, he made it clear in September he wanted to do it if he could make it work. And then somewhere along the line this winter, you know, teams will never come right out and say, because it's a Major League Baseball property, this event, teams will never come out and say we did not let that player go, but they can certainly lean on a player, and I think they might have leaned on Irvin. And it just, hey, we really need you. We have you under contract for 2 more years. You've never done this. You don't know what it entails, et cetera, et cetera. I'm just connecting dots why he would go from September gung-ho to December and January. No, I'm not interested or can't make it work. And then it happens, and I don't know if you saw that Johnny Cueto video from his apartment out west.
I didn't hear any of the audio, but I saw him like dancing around or something.
You got to listen to the audio because he's singing along as though he's in the stands with his Dominican friends cheering on that team, and the game's going on in the background. And I suppose Irvin had a similar Johnny Cueto moment and then just said, you know, I got to be part of this. Mm-hmm. And you hate to see I just know the Twins will have their fingers crossed. Everybody involved will just be very relieved when he's back from the event, because he is not ramped up to pitch yet at that level of competition. Just look at Andrew Miller and the struggles he had. That's not going to be Andrew Miller in April. I mean, there's a fine calibration that goes along with this, especially for pitchers, most of all for pitchers. And everybody will tell you spring training is for pitchers. So, yeah, you can send a position guy on to the WBC and be fairly convinced that when he comes back to you, he'll be pretty much on path for the regular season. But a pitcher, you're always going to have the trepidation.
Have you taken in any of the events, or do you have any interest in that kind of thing?
The WBC?
Yeah.
I've covered it each time, at least a little bit. I covered the finals in 06 and covered the early rounds in Miami where they were chanting, the Venezuelan fans were chanting NDC, Chavez, no. But when it was political, and then 13 was Maurer and Perkins across the state in Miami. But this time, nothing. It doesn't look like I will be doing any. And I've watched a little. I watched Italy implode last night, and I don't know why they can't find some random club. I don't know why, they can't find up. Brandon Kinsler looks Italian enough to me. Why can't he be the closer? I could let him be an honorary Italian. But that guy who pitches in China gave up the lead, so that was disappointing for my people.
There was some chatter that if the Salvador Perez injury had come out to be serious, that could be the nail in the coffin of the WBC. Do you get the sense that that's actually true, or is it just mostly people kind of thinking about, obviously the best players don't necessarily all want to go, and so it kind of waters down the talent pool, and it doesn't end up being all that representative of a World Baseball Classic? Or do you think it's one of those deals where, yeah, if Perez had been seriously injured, they would have reconsidered this?
Well, I don't think any one outcome will kill the WBC or something, but collective interest, for instance, in Canada, can't be that high when you have to keep watching retired Ryan Dempster, who I covered as a rookie with the 98 Marlins, had a great career, but he's done, right? He's retired. So why is retired Ryan Dempster taking the ball multiple times for Canada? It's embarrassing. Right? At some point, it becomes nothing against Dempster, but a retired guy in this. You're telling me this is for the championship of the world? No. It's just an event that happens to come along every 4 years in March that MLB sanctions and makes a ton of money off of, although there's a lot of empty seats. So it's a branding and a marketing opportunity. It's cool. Anytime you put the flags in the mix, especially since in this period where baseball hasn't been part of the Olympics, but was never what it could have been at the Olympics. It's coming back 2020, right? But, if they ever were to shut down the season for a couple weeks in the middle of the year, which I don't envision, and make early July make this when this would happen or something, that's then it would be more of a true world championship. Right now, it's the battle of whose organizers can get the highest participation rate, can check off the most top 40 players from their country and sneak them onto the roster, because the rejection rate is higher than most of my high school dances.
Well, that's not a snappy title to put on a trophy.
No, it's not. It'll say, I don't know, World Baseball Classic. It's a fine theory and a worthwhile endeavor. But I'm telling you, from anyone who employs these guys at the rate that they pay them to do their primary job, which is get people out and get on base for the main 6 months of the year plus October, they can't wait for it to be over.
No, I'm sure. So more Twins related, the first big injury to come down this spring, since we haven't had you on for a while, was Alex Kirilloff coming down with some elbow issues. He's going to now miss a large portion of the season, maybe be back in time for instructs. What did you see with that injury? And, obviously, is there a good time in a player's development to miss time? Because, you see it with Miguel Sano after playing in Double A, and then you see it with Kirilloff, who had only played, the very early portion of his career. What's your breakdown of that situation?
Well, that was one of those where they tried the platelet-rich plasma injections, and it's another one where it didn't work. Obviously, a decision made in conjunction with the player. That injury from last spring, I think I might have mentioned on your show that would have, even before we knew this news, that he, because he was shut down at the very end of last season, it kind of got lost in some people's minds, mm-hmm. unless they're just rabid Twins fans or paid to watch it.
Well, we know some of those too.
He always kind of wondered what that would mean for his prospect ranking or going into this year, because it was a throwing elbow, and he dominated the the Appalachian League last year, and he was certainly a level higher than you would have expected for a high school kid, but he's always been more mature. And obviously the timeline is such that if they had decided right then not to do the PRP, but go ahead and have Tommy John in September, well, he would have been ready by the start of spring training to hit in games probably, and he would have been throwing by, say, June 1st or something. But that's not the timeline. So basically a lost season of development. But like you say, instructs, and then, what, he'll be like 20 years old when he comes back next season. And mm-hmm. it's not, in the grand scheme, it's not going to be the end of the world. But they gave him several million dollars, and he will be on a fast track, I think. And that's disappointing for him. But I think it also could inform whether they allow the next wave under this new regime next person that wants to do PRP, you know, they have something to point to and say, well, it didn't work for him. Let's make sure this is the right thing. You saw with Lewis Thorpe where it ended up because he was shut down in a postseason a couple of years ago in the Midwest League as still a very young man, and came back the next spring, blew out, missed that season, and then got mono last season. And you look up and Lewis Thorpe, he's not 18 anymore, is he? So
no.
You lose some momentum a lot in his case.
Well, you said Kirilloff was mature. I think he got a high school diploma in baseball studies, so he's obviously ahead of the curve in that respect.
He's married, too. He didn't.
Oh, that's right. I remember seeing that on Twitter, yeah.
Went right out and got married. So he's checking off all the boxes, got the Tommy John out of the way. And,
man.
Just a very impressive young man. But here's the thing. The arm should come back fine. Sano's certainly has. You know, mm-hmm. Kepler is one example of a guy in Midwest League who didn't have Tommy John and rehabbed it, and it did work out for him. I don't believe he had the PRP, but he just rehabbed the heck out of it, and because there was concern in 13 that he might need Tommy John.
So yeah, he didn't come back till mid-June that year.
He missed time, yeah. So there was that certainly, and I've written about that, where he admitted he thought there were days when he thought he was going to have Tommy John, but it's not a death sentence, certainly. It's not like when they have to go into your shoulder for a pitcher. So I think Alex Kirilloff will be fine. Now we segue into friend of the show, Trevor May, and
yeah,
that's a big blow because it's not, well, A, it's shocking because, like you said, he never had. I asked him, I just want to make sure you never had any sort of arm problem in these 9 years as a professional. And he never had. He said he never missed a single day because of an arm issue. And then he throws 34 more pitches after the clip that you were able to put up there online, which was cool, of the curveball that he believes he blew out on. But somehow he threw 34 more pitches and then talked for another 10 to 12 minutes with us and was showing us curveball grips. His new curveball grip, which he said he didn't want to incriminate anybody, but and that's not the reason. But Kevin Jepson, he consulted him. He consulted Ricky Nolasco. He's talked to.
No, those are pretty good curveball guys. I mean, you know, that's not bad curveballs to emulate.
But I don't think that's why he blew out. But here's the, you know, you're just always going to wonder. This perfectly clean arm, but they kept moving him from starting to relieving to stretching back out last spring mm-hmm. to start, and then no, you're back in the bullpen, and then. This was bad for his back, we know.
Yeah.
But we'll never know just how bad it was for his elbow.
Well, it's that gift that I made, heaven help us that I've learned how to do that, stands to reason, though, that had the look of a reaction like something was wrong. Now, again, pitchers will have that reaction, you know, where you shake your hand, maybe the ball comes out funny, and that would stand to reason mm-hmm. with how the curveball bounced. But you get the sense that he had a pretty good idea of when it went. Now, do you think he had the inside track on what's that?
Why would he throw a single additional pitch if he really thought it went? Like he said, he'd felt that before, Brandon. He had felt that sort of thing before, and it would be highly foolish mm-hmm. and irresponsible to keep throwing 34 more pitches and pitch two more plus innings after thinking, well, that might be it. So the other thing you'll wonder is that was his first time throwing to Jason Castro, if I'm remembering correctly, and Jimenez had really gotten to the point where I think he was going to be Trevor May's personal catcher this year and was really locked in on him. And Jimenez caught Jepson in the offseason back in Arizona. They're good buddies. So he and Jepson was one of Trevor's top mentors. So he was perfectly positioned for that. And you always wonder, Jimenez, who kept running out for visits when we were in Clearwater to talk to Trevor, you know, just everything, you know, except fluffing his pillow, would he have picked up on something sooner that would have gotten him out of that? I'm not saying Jason Castro failed to see it, but he wasn't as familiar with Trevor May. He just hadn't worked with him that much.
Well, and I wonder, too, if it wasn't revisionist thinking, you know, when maybe he didn't feel anything on any of the other pitches, and so it's just such a similar feeling to him from the other times where he might have just had a little blip on the radar where he's like, well, it's got to be that, you know. Sometimes it's in the moment you're not really sure, but when you look back, you might have more intel. But one thing I wanted to ask you was, do you think he had the inside track to the number five starter spot? Because some people, you know, have speculated that now with how well he had pitched, and Neil Allen seemed to kind of intimate that on the broadcast the next the day. It was either the day of or the day after the announcement came. I think it was the day of. But part of that, too, probably just is to make it sound like he's a bigger loss than, you know, if they were going to send him to Rochester and stretch him out more like you had kind of hinted at. Do you feel like he had the inside track?
It was pretty early in the process, and he wasn't that efficient.
Yeah.
To that point, there were really some long innings, and even he was admitting that he was in very much in experimental mode. Imagine that. He was just throwing two seamers right down the middle and seeing how they would react, something he's never felt empowered to do. So even though he was competing for a spot, he was using more two seamers than ever. And he, again, like we say, was messing with his grip. He was tweaking his delivery again to bring it back towards something he had done earlier in his career, when certainly in his pre-reliever days. There was still a lot that the Twins had to see out of him before they would be giving him that fifth spot. It's still very wide open. And Mejia is the one that I think is going to tempt them among everyone. But I'm sure they entered the spring within the back of their mind thinking, well, he's only had one start in the majors, mm-hmm. and it was abbreviated. And they barely know him, having gotten him in the Nunez deal. So they'd like to see him down at AAA for a couple of months. But he's the one that so far... he's the one who consistently gets the raves from Molitor post-game.
Do you still get the sense that Vogelsong has a fairly good chance? I know you've mentioned on Twitter that we've talked about it here. I think my next roster projection, which might drop today, we'll see, is probably going to have him as my number five starter. But, you know, another name in the mix is Jose Berríos, who's obviously off doing the WBC thing, but Tyler Duffy probably there, Justin Haley maybe less so, but a number of names still in the mix, Mejia as well. If you were to handicap it right now, you know, who do you think is just like the lead dog?
Well, I don't really do that. I'm not a big fan of that. But
sure.
Because it can change. For instance, I feel quite confident that Justin Haley is going to make this team as a Rule 5 pick, but will he be the fifth starter? Unlikely. He got a chance to start yesterday, mm-hmm. and he didn't do well. And he's going to be carried in that long reliever role, and I think they like a lot about him. And he is traditionally a starter, but I think he'll be carried as Rule 5 picks usually are in a less obvious role. But Duffy's showing flashes, a lot of them up and down the line. And yes, I stay with the idea that Vogelsong's a very nice fallback option to start the year. Vogelsong was very upbeat the other day after his first start, and he also, being the veteran, the 39-year-old veteran that he is, he offered up a weakness that, if you step back and think about it, actually was, and Molitor even had a little sideways grin when we mentioned it to him, that by Vogelsong saying, you know, I keep trying to get better at relieving, but I'm just better starting. It's just I've always been better starting. That's not a veteran saying, you know, start me or else. He wouldn't do that. Mm-hmm. But he's had enough opportunity, especially the last 2 years, to get used to relieving. And he's telling them through us that he still doesn't feel right, doesn't feel loose enough on the mound, just doesn't have his rhythm. And then he goes out as a starter and he says, hey, everything felt great and I was using all my pitches and I made quick adjustments, and that's really who he is. So, yeah, I think he'll make the team too. And if he does, it's probably as the fifth starter. But Berríos, good job by him the other day, rebounding from the Drew Butera treatment, and that Andreoli took him deep, and it could have been disastrous. And he gets through four innings and leaves with a lead. So if he could build on that, that's ostensibly the most nervous he'll be at the WBC, and the first one this year. So maybe the next one's one that he can seize that fifth spot. But I still think that everybody else that we've mentioned here has something they really need to work on and does have options.
Yeah.
So why not open the year, especially when you don't need a fifth starter that often in the first part of April? Why not let that be a Vogelsong, who might be making starts on 9 days rest and such?
Well, another position battle that is probably more intriguing to people like us than the average fan is the backup catcher job. I feel pretty confident Chris Jimenez is the guy they want to go with there. Both the other guys, Garver and Murphy, have options as well, or option in the case of Murphy, one left. And so I think they'll want to just start with Jimenez, maybe not stick with him, but obviously hits lefties, and obviously nothing terribly impressive on the stat line, but teammates rave about him as a guy in the clubhouse and leadership and all that stuff, and he's been a part of some good teams, and that'll go a long ways in the eyes of evaluators as well. So I think I feel pretty strongly he's going to be their backup catcher. How about you?
Oh yeah, stop copying me. No, he's definitely. That's a no-brainer, really.
Yeah.
Just the fact that he's bounced back and forth between Texas and Cleveland the last couple of years. And so the Falveen really knows him, and he helped them win. And he keeps his mouth shut if he's not playing, and mm-hmm. went and tries to contribute where he can. Molitor loves him. Like I said, he probably was positioning himself to be Trevor May's personal catcher. If it's not May, then maybe not. He'll learn Berríos. If it's Berríos, whatever. Chris Jimenez is a net asset to a team, and especially if he can be a nice platoon balance, a loose platoon for Castro against the tougher lefties. And Mitch Garver just really centers up a lot of balls when he hits. He's going to be a good major league hitting catcher. Mm-hmm. But they, like you say, they have fallbacks for both he and Murphy. And Jimenez is on a minor league deal, but has enough experience that he could opt out if they could give him $100,000 to go to minor leagues. But I think they really like what he brings off the field and work and with a staff and preparation and really a tandem with Castro, where that's a lot of knowledge to put together to help that staff, many young people on it. So I'm curious to see how that will carry into the year.
How close is the battle at DH between Byung-ho Park, who is not on the roster but is hitting quite well so far this spring, and then Kenny Vargas?
Well, Vargas is in a weird spot going off to WBC, and he really hadn't shown anything before that. Not that you can read, again, these job battles when, we understand that everybody's kind of playing with a hand tied behind their back. It's kind of goofy to decide them this way. Byung-ho started very fast, and then got a little quiet there for a couple of weeks. But overall, he's had the same spring he had last year, where he looked like he was going to just drop right in and be a middle-of-the-order presence all year. Well, that got sideways in May, and part of it was the hand/wrist at that point. And part of it was when that first round of adjustments was made by opposing pitchers, and he could not adjust back, and he lost confidence quickly. And saw all those check swings. And mm-hmm. Mulder even had to talk to him about committing to the swing and stop trying to be too perfect. But until he gets a chance, I think he will open the year as the DH. And Vargas, who does have another year of options, will go back to AAA and may really benefit from a change of scenery at some point. But if Park's the guy, even in his own mind, he won't be able to build confidence until he gets into a season and starts to produce again there. So he's going to need a good solid month. A good April fast start for him would be vital. And but I think it does look like he's got the upper hand.
All right, I got two things left, and then we'll let you fly. What's the latest on Perkins and Hughes? Obviously, Hughes has been doing all the normal stuff, but I don't suspect any restrictions for him. Maybe they'll skip a start here or there just to keep his innings down, just because of how little he pitched last year. But what's the latest on him and Glenn Perkins?
Well, Perkins just keeps throwing a bullpen every fourth day or so, or every fourth day, and there's very little urgency, if any, on the staff's part or his part to ramp him up. So they're really just building arm strength and getting his feet under him. And I do think that I've asked Molitor if May 1st even would be a good date to circle to get him onto the major league roster. And he said, no, that we still have hurdles to get through before we can start even throwing any dates out.
So he could be a 60-day?
If May could potentially, and obviously Trevor May will be one.
Yeah.
If not Baez, they're going to have to add some people to this roster. Mm-hmm. Breslow is one if he stays put. If he doesn't opt out. Park.
Vogelsong.
Vogelsong. Jimenez.
Yep, that's a
and
lot.
And potentially Drew Stubbs.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, we're going to get to that when I let you go.
Drew Stubbs will give them something to think about, but Grossman's not doing anything to hurt himself this spring. So, Perkins, if May 1st, they're not even willing to say, yeah, that's about right. That should tell you something. And Hughes gave up a few home runs the other day. I wasn't at that. It was a split squad. But on the backfield, that was the day we wrote about it. You know, through 24 change-ups, and so trying to Neil Allen, really trying to get him to, if not reinvent himself, then at least commit to something that he struggled to commit to, and that is just working in more change-ups along with the slow curve. And his four-seamer is just not going to create very much swing and miss anymore. He just cannot blow the ball by people at 90 or 91, so he has to outfox them, and he's smart enough to do that, and so far the back and the leg have held up. There's been no early rib, the thoracic outlet, the arm strength, that's been no issue. His back's been a problem in the past. We're not hearing any physical woes. It's just his pitchability, and that's a work in progress.
What does your bench look like to open the season? I got Jimenez, Adrianza, Escobar, and Grossman, but I'm pretty far from the solution here. And that does depend on how many guys are on the pitching staff. So if you do add a fifth man, then it's probably Drew Stubbs for me. You still got Danny Santana to think about, maybe a bat, if you keep Park and Vargas, which I really don't see happening. But what does your bench look like before we let you go?
I'm terrible with your projections. You know, I just try to look for the best story day to day. It doesn't do me any good when I'm down here at ground zero to
sure.
Start ticking off some guy by saying, I don't have you on my roster, sorry. You know, that he's on the roster, and then all year I become his bulletin board
True.
Material.
True, that's fair.
You're not going to become his bulletin board material as easily as I would, because I'm right there in his face, mm-hmm. You know, home and road, so I don't do that.
Do you think Stubbs has a good chance to make the team, though?
He looks athletic still, and Molitor has even said as much.
Mm-hmm.
They've spotted him against some lefties to see if he can be a weapon in that way, and he has not been. Scouts still see the same holes in his swing that causes a lot of swing and miss. So there's some skepticism certainly among the evaluators from other teams.
Well, your fourth doesn't have to play center in this situation either with three guys that start that can play center. That's my opinion.
Yeah.
I got bopped on the head for saying that publicly, but
they moved Kepler over there. Kepler played a full game in Jupiter the other day, and the last part of it was in center, and he could certainly handle that. Rosario can handle it, mm-hmm. So you're right. And Stubbs also understands, he's a realistic guy, that he has shown nothing at the plate the last 2 years and
right.
Struggled to stay healthy. And I think they could stash him at AAA pretty easily if they want to. So I think he likes the feel of this this landscape and this organization. And I'd be surprised if, like Quinton and Sweeney last year, he runs away from the Twins. I think he's going to hang around and maybe in Logan Schaefer-type form
sure.
Surface at some point if he doesn't break with them. They also, you know, the other thing to keep in mind is there's waiver moves at the end of the spring, and then there's also some trades that can be made, and Robbie Grossman's value to some other team might be higher than this team because they might actually give him DH run. He doesn't seem necessarily like he's going to get that here. But there's a lot to still be determined, and let's not forget that the people making these decisions are still learning this organization. They're still seeing these people on the field for the first time since taking over the two guys. So that's why it's very hard to project, and I will not do it.
Well, Mike, thanks for your time. Get out there and enjoy that sunshine, and we'll look forward to seeing you here at Target Field in about a month.
Cool. Thanks.
Thank you.
That was Mike Berardino of the St. Paul Pioneer Press graciously joining us for a little over a half hour from Fort Myers. Tom,
yeah.
Now that you finished lunch or
are close halfway
to
done.
Yeah, we'll give you a nice natural digestion break here and chat for a little bit about the Twins.
Nice.
expectations for this year? You know, what? Let's take your temperature of this team so far in spring training. What have you seen so far?
Yeah, no, I've talked to a few people about this, obviously, who know I cover the team, and I've always had this theory that really the Twins were like a 74, 75 win team the last 2 years, and that they overachieved 2 years ago, and that they you know, obviously greatly underachieved last year. You know, there are some intriguing parts. I'm kind of curious about the pitching, especially, you know, Trevor May going down. Vogelson Sung's a guy I saw when I was living in the Bay Area. He was a Giants pitcher. I am kind of curious about the connections these players have with Valvi and Levine, because you would think they have maybe some favoritism towards players that they coached in the past, or at least were part of the organizations they were part of. But I think, and maybe I'm wrong, maybe it's just manufactured or it's recency bias, but it seems like there's more competition in camp than there has been in the last few years. Between kind of the Vargas and Byung-ho Park, the catcher position, the fact that they, you know, and it was Terry Ryan, not this regime, but traded for John Ryan Murphy. And you would think that, you know, he'd be a guy. Who was it we had on? The Yankees guy who was like, he thought he would be an everyday player,
Mike,
right?
Mike Exisa, I believe.
Yeah, I mean, I just think there's been more storylines coming out of camp. It seems like more competition. And that should only bode well for a team that really needs to, you know, we talk about with United joining the fray here. You just can't be bad in Minnesota, because you're going to get...
You're going to get buried.
Yeah, I mean, it's gonna end up, you know, you see the passion of Wild fans, for example, compared to, I think there's very passionate Wolves fans, but they said, look, if you want me to buy a ticket, go to the playoffs, stop selling hope. I think the Twins are slowly in that place, and it's kind of funny. Over the last, you know, probably 6-7 years ago, we would have said the Twins were kind of the model franchise and one of the, you know, best run Minnesota franchises. And now, between all the Mauer stuff and the lack of development of pitchers and just the weird outfields they've thrown out in the past years, there's kind of been this. It's been discouraging, I think, for fans here.
I think the situation this year, this offseason, has been to surround these young players with mentally capable veterans. And what I mean by that is, obviously, Castro is a Stanford guy, so he's intelligent, first and foremost. Craig Breslow, you know, biophysics or biomechanics, mentally capable, but also veterans who've been there. Castro, obviously, on some very bad teams, has lost a lot, knows what it takes to win with the upturn of the Astros, has caught some pitchers that, you know, Dallas Keuchel and Colin McHugh, or who he's helped turn into what they became. You know, you might have to ask those guys how much Castro mattered.
Yeah, that the pitch framing helps.
Yeah, you know.
I mean, the other thing, too, is him being part of the Astros organization. They're, I think, a thorn in the side of the Twins, because they both were bad at the same time, kind of, right?
They've rebuilt, and the Twins have kind of just remained stagnant.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, I also think there's a lot of corporate espionage in sports, and it's probably not a bad thing to bring over a guy from an organization that's succeeding, right?
I was also told that if Carlos Correa hadn't been drafted first overall by the Astros, that's who the Twins wanted to take.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, imagine Carlos Correa on this team right now instead of Buxton. I mean, that'd be huge. You know, it's one of those deals where, I think they want, you know, Chris Jimenez, mentally capable veteran, Ryan Vogelsong, Craig Breslow, all these guys who have varying levels. I mean, Vogelsong's won World Series championships with the Giants. They've each done something different, and it's also at different levels. Vogelsong in the rotation, you've got a guy that's foundational to the middle of the infield, you've got outfielders Drew Stubbs, JB Shuck, guys who aren't going to steal the headlines but will do things behind the scenes, where I think a lot of the losses came from. You know, Torrey Hunter behind the scenes did a lot of things to help that 2015 team win. Obviously not a 24 game swing.
Yeah, people like to,
based on his play and his camaraderie in the clubhouse, you know, singing Prince and all that stuff. Like, that's not a 24 game swing.
Yeah, the smoke machine.
Yeah, that's the volatility of young talent. And I think what they want to do is kind of cage that in and say, okay, you know, Miguel Sano, you can be Miguel Sano, but we want you to kind of stick to our plan here. And, you know, maybe someone can reel him in, whether it's Chris Jimenez or whoever.
Yeah, I think the other thing, too, is it probably complements what they're trying to do with players who are no longer playing, who are part of the organization, right? You know, Michael Kadire.
Yeah, the trio of authority with Kadire and Hunter and LaTroy Hawkins.
Yeah, and I think part of it is they lost something when Kadire leaves, and I think he's a guy who set a standard for what a Major League Baseball player should be and how you act in the clubhouse.
Well, think about this. The first year they lost, it took everybody by shock. Joe Nathan,
right,
Michael Kadire. And then when those guys left, losing became part of the culture. Losing was not... Now, if Kadire had hung around and they had signed him instead of Willingham or kept Kubel around, maybe you don't see a different result. Maybe you still
I mean, there were
some
obvious flaws with the team.
But I think there was a certain culture aspect. And again, that's not the difference between losing 100 games and winning 90 games year in and year out like they were doing late Metrodome, first year at Target Field.
Yep.
But I think they let that culture aspect go out the window a little bit. They threw the baby out with the bathwater. And they didn't have any of those guys coming up through the system. You know, obviously Brian Dozier became a great player.
Yeah, yeah.
But he did not have that level of ego allowability. You know, Torrey Hunter had that moxie. And you know,
yeah, he called it inner cockiness, yeah, I think is what he called it.
You talked to Jamie Ogden. I don't know if you're familiar with him. He lives in White Bear Lake. He was in the Twin system for six, 7 years and just missed getting the big leagues. Back issue. They had his first kid, and he just decided, I'm done.
Yeah.
He's still a big fixture up in White Bear Lake. And he would talk about, first of all, the Kirby effect and how Kirby molded Torrey.
Yep.
When you're drafted like Torrey in the first round, you have equity. You're not only going to have multiple chances. It's the same reason Chris Parmalee would hang around, but Chris Colabello would be thrown out.
Right, completely.
Because when you're a first-round pick and they have so much invested...
And the scouts don't want to be wrong.
Yep, same reason Trevor Plouffe hung around as long as he did when it might have been
Aaron Hicks, maybe, too.
Aaron Hicks will get countless chances. Dozier didn't have that kind of equity coming through, and so it's probably hard for him to foster that leadership
role. He maybe
role.
Can do it now.
He probably can now.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you don't do it all the way up, I don't think it builds... around you. You might do it narrow, like a pillar, rather than building an entire house.
Yeah.
So if Torrey, especially because Torrey came up with all the same guys too, the Jack Joneses, the Doug Minkiewicz, Corey Koski. Whether we want to believe that that culture stuff matters or not, it built on itself to the point where a Twins team in 2001, or even 02, the first division winning team, I feel like I look back at those teams now and I'm just like, well, those teams aren't more talented than this Twins team.
No, it was
They were tailored to play in the Metrodome, speed on the carpet.
Yep.
They played great defense. Christian Guzman was a really good shortstop before he messed
probably
up his shoulder.
Probably the last great shortstop they had.
Yeah, and so they were tailored for the stadium that they played in, first and foremost. They hit on Johan Santana in the Rule 5 draft. They hit on the trade with Pierzynski to kind of sustain them through the next wave.
Yep.
But that team wasn't more talented than this current Twins team, or even the 2010 team, the last truly great target, the only truly great target field team. But they got away from that. And Byron Buxton doesn't have that same moxie. He's got more of an unassuming, very quiet leadership.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't have that ability to command a room, whereas Miguel Sano probably does.
Yeah.
But it just does. It hasn't turned into that cult-like, hey, everyone, jump on my back, like Kirby Puckett said in Game 6 of the 91 World Series.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like they don't have that guy in there right now. I think Sano could be that guy. But I feel like they're hesitant to give it to him because, first of all, you see how the umpires, how he and the umpires are not on the same page.
Yeah.
And you never had that with Kirby Puckett. You never had that with Torrey Hunter.
Yeah.
I mean, even when Torrey Hunter
started throwing all his clothes.
Well, he threw the baseball back at Danny Baez
years
ago, and he plowed over Jamie Burke, and he did things that teammates would like, but he never got into it with umpires. You know, late in his career, by that point, he was already galvanized as Torrey Hunter, the guy.
Yeah.
So there was never going to be a deal where Torrey Hunter would become a bad guy. Now, you've got his political statements and everything off the field that a certain group of people don't care for him. But in that clubhouse, you'd be hard-pressed to find someone who would tell you they didn't like Torrey Hunter.
You could kind of feel it, what he had going on. There was just he created a very immediate incentive to win. That's how I'd put it.
How do you pass that torch?
I mean, it's just hard. I mean, how many people bring a smoke machine into a clubhouse, right?
Yeah.
And so, Snow comes off as kind of a kind of goofy and kind of happy-go-lucky.
Is he a little immature? Can a leader be immature? I know because Torrey jokes around. I'm sure the things Torrey does behind closed doors with the guys to get them loose. You know, like we saw today, Anthony Rizzo gave naked postseason speeches in clubhouse. So it wouldn't surprise me.
I mean, Mike Redmond did this, right?
Yeah.
It
wouldn't surprise me if LaTroy Hawkins did stuff like that. It wouldn't surprise me if Torrey Hunter did. And, you know, those are the kind of things that it just makes guys giggle. Because they're all big kids playing baseball.
Right, right.
Making millions of dollars.
how do you pass that torch? Can you pass that torch? Incidentally, how much can Torrey Hunter actually do from his post this year, which will be still living in Texas, but broadcasting some games, being, you know, coming around once a month, twice a month.
I mean, he's like a consultant, basically.
I mean, I wonder how much he can affect the culture, and I wonder how much that matters with who they've gone and gotten.
And they had success with they would call them like the M&M boys when Morneau and Maurer were at their best.
But Torrey Hunter was still on that team.
Was he? Or did they
Until
trade him
2007.
Away?
2007.
Yeah.
And then but the years after he left and after Johan, they won in spite of themselves. Nobody thought they were going to win after Johan was gone.
Yeah.
Johan never played in the postseason outside of a Twins uniform.
Yeah.
It's just incredible.
Playing in New York. Yeah. I mean, part of that was the Madoff.
But everybody thought, you know, Johan's gone. The Twins are going to be bad again. And then that 2008, I want to say, they didn't make the playoffs because they force-fed Gomez. Didn't play well at first and was not ready, but they felt the need to justify the trade.
Yeah.
But the winning after that, like, nobody had expected them to. Now, the 2010 team obviously was stacked with Jim Thome, Orlando Hudson, J.J. Hardy, Carl Pavano making the first start at Target Field, all that.
Yeah.
They were expected to win then. But once Johan was gone, once Brad Radke's shoulders hanging on by, you know, tatters, they weren't expected to win. Right after that happened, and again, that was they kind of persevered with that Metrodome. Yes, we can. Now, was Denard Span that kind of leader? I don't know. Span was a
goofy guy.
I was
a Span fan.
I liked Denard Span a lot, and in fact, might have made sense for the Twins when he was a free agent when he signed with the Giants.
Right.
But again, you have I don't know how they recreate that atmosphere.
I mean, it's just they're different players.
Because Torrey Hunter developed as Torrey Hunter, the guy starting in 1993. When he was a homesick 18-year-old kid that still wasn't sure he made the right choice between baseball and football.
Yeah, and
do they need to go back down there and have a player come up through the system like an Alex Kirilloff right now who is just out of high school? Is he going to be the next guy? Can the Twins afford to wait 3 or 4 more years for that to happen?
Yeah, they definitely can't do
that.
I mean, I'm just curious what the kind of who becomes the leaders, because I like Max Kepler's game. I really think his swing is good, and he'll
I don't
be a.
I think he's a foundational leader, though.
Yeah, I mean, I
great guy, and probably a great complimentary player.
Right.
He's like maybe a Kevin Love at his peak.
Yeah.
Like he can really hit
an important role on a winning team.
Yeah, fantastic player. I would never. I don't want to say Kevin Love and demean him, because Kevin Love put up great numbers in Minnesota, couldn't get to the postseason.
Right.
And can a team led by Max Kepler make it to the postseason? Probably not.
Yeah, but I'm just curious what the, you know, Buxton, I think, is quiet. I think he's going to be a player. I don't think there's questions about that. But, you know, maybe it's Sano, but again, he seems a little goofy right now.
You know, the ticket is for me is 2 years from now, when Maurer's off the books, Irvin Santana's off the books, you have resolution on Dozier, whether it's somewhere else or bringing him back.
Yeah.
That's the offseason. Bryce Harper's a free agent. Manny Machado's a free agent. And the Twins have like $22 million committed to that payroll right now.
Yeah, I mean,
go out and spend $40 million a year on Bryce Harper and build around him. It'll never happen.
Yeah,
all of
I mean, the one one thing
Machado.
I should one thing I should have brought up with JB Shuck and some of these guys. At the very least, it seems like the core may be unstable, but there has to be positive qualities about the Twins if these veterans are coming in, because there's other teams they could join that would give them a quicker route to winning.
Well, unless it's opportunity. They know
They
know that it's a place that they can play. There's two schools of thought. You want to go where you can win, or you want to go where you can play.
Sure.
But I mean, Vogelsong, he's 39. He's got two rings. If he wants to keep playing.
But I mean, he could have chosen another team.
All I'm saying is if he wants to keep playing and he chose the Twins, I think that does say something about the Twins, like to your point. And I think the stuff that we heard about the discussions, you know, Ken Rosenthal wrote about the discussions that Craig Breslow had with Derek Falvey. Oh, this guy's got a vision. This guy. Well, and then, you know, Breslow's the kind of player that you want eventually have work for you.
Yeah.
Front office, coaching staff, whatever, super heady, super intelligent. You know, it's one of those deals where I think Derek Falvey gives off enough of a good vibe and of a vibe of knowing what he's doing and knowing what he's talking about that I do think he did hook some of these vets that probably did have better opportunities, whether it's money, playing time, what have you. And the fact of the matter is that most of these guys are probably going to make the roster. Guys like Ryan O'Rourke, probably on the outs. Michael Tonkin, probably on the outs.
Yeah.
it's all fringe guys, so it's not guys you got to really wring your hands over. Now, will I be upset if Buddy Beauchesne gets dumped in favor of Craig Breslow? Yeah, I'll be disappointed because I thought Beauchesne.
And you want some younger or prime age players too,
as opposed to a 36-year-old or 35-year-old who's remanufacturing his throwing motion. Yeah, that's true. Any other twin stuff? I mean, obviously, can't put too much in the results. Have you watched any World Baseball Classic? I've just caught bits and pieces.
I haven't. Is it only on MLB Network, or is it?
I honestly, that's the only place I've seen any of it.
I don't get that, unfortunately.
I'm sure you can stream it on YouTube, probably.
I like it. I mean, I like the idea of
not
it. I understand.
Super legally.
Yeah.
But,
right.
I mean,
I'm sure teams don't like it.
The Dominican games are bananas. The fans. It's like a World Series vibe. Like, it was Manny Machado hit a bomb, I think, at like Marlin Stadium, and the fans are just going nuts. It was USA and Dominican, I think.
Okay.
And USA was up like 5-0, and the Dominicans just stormed back and won 7-5, and it was just a heck of a game to watch. And it's a really fun vibe. I'm still really trying to plug into it because I still don't know anything about it. I don't know anything about the World Cup. I don't know how they compare, you know, pool play and elimination stuff.
Yeah.
But it's a really cool concept, and I hope that someday they figure out a way to get more players involved. But at the same time, like Mike said, that Salvador Perez injury, he's basically ironclad, can't hurt the guy, and Drew Butera took out his knee. I mean, there's nothing that worse that can happen to a catcher. I mean, look at Joe Mauer's history of knee issues, starting with that one of those first games in his career. He slides along the turf at the Metrodome, tears his meniscus, and then the rest of his career we got to worry about his knee. That's what's going to keep teams from sending their young talent to those kind of things.
So I like the concept. It's more than anything, I don't have MLB Network, so it's not available to me. It's hard to watch.
Well, that's all I got for this week. You've been listening to Midwest Swing, part of the Cold Omaha Podcast Network. Join us again next week. We'll have a really sweet, fun guest. In the meantime, join our March Madness pool on Facebook. Check us out, zonecoverage.com, zonecoverage.com/Amazon for all your Amazon shopping needs. Again, you've been listening to Midwest Swing, part of the Cold Omaha Podcast Network.